Good morning, great men and women of God. We're going to be in Psalm 9 and 10 this morning. In just a minute, we'll get there. And then we're actually going to kind of focus in on one phrase there. But let me kind of walk us towards that. When I was 10 years old, I came home from school, and my mom and my stepdad were standing outside our home. And that was kind of unusual, the time of day. And they said, hey, good news, we're going to go to a hotel and spend the night. I thought, this is exciting. I'm excited that we're going to get to go do that. I don't know why that fell. And they said, but I said, well, let me go grab my stuff. And they said, well, we can't go back in the house to get your stuff. Oh. And they said, actually, we can't ever go back in the house again. And I thought, this is weird. I didn't know what was going on. And as it turns out, a major pesticide company that had come to treat our home for cockroaches or whatever had misapplied this dangerous chemical. The Texas Department of Health had condemned our home. In fact, what would end up happening a few months later is they would come in with all the hazmat suits and the bulldozers, and they just leveled our house, and they took the top 6 inches of topsoil off of the ground. It was that bad. It was a condemned site. And I remember walking away that day, and you know, I was thinking about all my photos, all my toys, all my Star Wars figures. For some reason, still, I was just thinking about it again this week. For some reason, there was a camp I had gone to where I had learned how to sail, and it was really difficult for me. I wasn't very good at it, and I barely passed the sailing merit badge thing or whatever it was. And so I was given this, as the badge, I was given like this piece of a sail that was hanging on my room, on my wall, that announced, you know, Camp Grady Spruce, sailing certificate, all that stuff, and it was gone too. And for some reason, I still think about that. Isn't that weird? We left that day with the clothes on our back, and then we had to take those clothes and put them in a trash sack and throw them away as well. And for the next 2 years, we ended up living in a rental home, and it didn't have enough bedrooms, and so where I slept was the entryway of the house. So you open the door, and there I was. And my parents put up this little partition to kind of shield me from that, but you know, as a middle school student, you wanted a little more privacy than that. And I remember actually when we finally got into a home a few years later, how much I was in love with the fact that I had a door. Wow, a door. And during that time, during that season of our family's life, I really felt like God taught me a lot about what it means to be displaced. I learned that what's most important in life can fit in the front and back seat of a car. I learned that losing your home affects everyone in different ways. It would be years later that I would realize some of the toll that it took on my parents during that time. And I learned that when you're displaced, sometimes you have to swallow your pride and rely on the goodwill and generosity of other people for help. And that's sometimes hard to do. Well, a few months ago, the heavens opened up and it rained on our roof, on the building over there. Fact was, our building was going through a long overdue roof renovation. We've been talking about that for years, and we were finally doing it that week when the deluge happened. And it's been hard. We probably are trying to get a better job of communicating with you guys what's going on, but I'll just tell you this. The auditorium has been destroyed. Like, it's destroyed. We can't go in there. If you walk by, and some of you have wanted to do this, I just want to take a quick peek. Don't. You can't go in that room. I mean, it's off limits. We're stripping it down to the studs. I mean, we're gonna have to redo that whole thing. And what it's been interesting to watch how our church has experienced some displacement. Some of us were displaced right now in this room, but every area of our church has experienced displacement. Children's ministry, students' ministry. And this displacement is gonna continue all the way into 2016 as we try to recover from this. But just like I learned when I was 10, God can use displacement to teach us things that are valuable. I think, as I've been praying about this, and like, Lord, what's going on? I think this is what he's trying to teach me. And it's this, that God can use our displacement to offer refuge to the displaced around us. That he can use our displacement, and instead of just focusing on ourselves and what we're going through, that we can say, wow, this is just a small, tiny little taste of what many people's whole life is like. The orphan, the refugee, those who've lost their homes. And even the fact that God might be saying to some of us today that we may need to experience a little more displacement to really grab his heart for those who are displaced in our world. What I'd like to do this morning is I'd like to share with you out of Psalm 9 and 10 a little bit of God's heart for the displaced. And then I'm going to, after our reflection time, show you some ways that at Pulpit Rock we're trying to take some steps of action and faith in that. So that's what we're going to do today. You ready? You good? Tracking? Yes, thank you. Psalm 9. So I've been walking through the Psalms as part of my devotional life this year, and I've been reading through them and trying to reflect on what God is saying. And it's been amazing. I keep seeing this pattern again and again and again. Over and over, it seems the Psalms are these poems written by people who are crying out for refuge. In fact, this fun little game I'm having as I'm reading through the Psalms, I'm just circling the word refuge every time I find it, and it's almost in every Psalm. I'm finding it everywhere. Now, in the original Hebrew writing, Psalm 9 and 10 was one big, long poem. And they broke it up for our sake. But originally, it was one long poem. And so as I was reading Psalm 9 and 10 together, I started to see God's heart for the displaced. Let me read a few verses and see if you can pick out kind of what God's attitude is here. Psalm 9, verse 9. The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in time of trouble. Verse 12 says, he who avenges blood remembers that he does not ignore the cries of the afflicted. I love Psalm 18. God will never forget the needy. The hope of the afflicted will never perish. And then as it's one whole long poem, I jump to Psalm 10, and verse 14 started to say this to me. It said, but you, God, see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it into hand. And in these verses, in the surrounding context, I encourage you to read the whole thing when you have time. I started to see God's heart for the displaced. It says he's a refuge for the oppressed, that he doesn't ignore the cries of the afflicted, that he never forgets the needy, that he sees the trouble. And I love this. He considers the grief. But as I was reading through these Psalms, and I was thinking about all the events happening kind of in our nation, in our country, in our world, and all the things that we're talking about, and about people who are really facing true distress, I wondered this as I was reading the psalm. Is knowing that God cares enough? Is it really enough? I mean, you know how like when some athlete or somebody gets injured in an NFL game and the announcers, they don't really know what to say because they can't say we're praying for you, right? So they are like, well, our thoughts are certainly with him. I'm sure that makes him feel so much better. Thanks for all my thoughts. My leg is broken, but thanks for the thoughts. And in some ways, I'm reading this psalm, I'm wondering, God, you know, it's great to know that you care for us. That really does help in real ways. But it'd be better to know that you actually are going to do something. That's what I'd like to see. And then I came to verse 14. The victims commit themselves to you. And then read this with me. You are the helper of the fatherless. And I felt like God was reminding me there, Thomas, I do more than care, I act. I do more than just have a heart for the displaced. I get into the mud. I touch the leper. I take the hand. I give up my throne, and I get my hands dirty, and I give my life. And it was a reminder to me in that moment that God does more than just care about us and have a heart for us, but he actually wants to bring help to us. So how does he do that? How does God offer help to the fatherless? And as we know about God and the kind of faith that we have, and we just got through singing the song, Strong God, and sometimes we have songs that we sing because all of the songs we sing hopefully are communicating things that we believe are true, but sometimes we sing songs that we need them to be true. Does that make sense? So we sang Strong God today, and there's part of me that, I don't know where you were, but part of me, I needed to say today, God, I believe you're a strong God. I needed to believe that. And God is a strong God. And what's amazing to me is that God has this ability because he's God and he's infinite. And he could fix everything if he wanted to. He could snap his fingers. He could speak a word. He could heal. He could fix. He could change. And sometimes he does that. And one of the fun things about reading through the Bible is just hearing these amazing supernatural ways that he helped the fatherless and helped those who were displaced. He healed the blind. He fed the hungry. He told a storm, stop it. And it stopped. But as you read through this book, most often it seems that the way that God brings help to the fatherless is through a very common tool, us, his people. God, as you realize, when God brought the Israelites out of slavery, I mean, here's millions of people that suddenly become refugees on the run from a horrible dictator that was brutalizing them. God could have just snapped his fingers, like I said, and he could have made them appear in a new place, or he could have just sent all the plagues one by one. He could have dealt with Pharaoh directly, but God said, no, I want to get a guy involved. He's not the best public speaker, but I want him to walk with me to offer refuge. And he took Moses. Well, you think about when Christ came to this earth, I still marvel at his plan. It seems like a bad plan to me. Like a better plan would be if Christ had just descended from heaven with a host of angels and with a clap of thunder and said, I'm God, and here's how this works. And everyone would have heard him, and here's the gospel, put faith in me. And everybody would have said, okay, this is great. And instead, Jesus says, no, I just want to hang out for a while. And then I'm going to ask 12 men who have no training at all to be the ones that are going to offer refuge to the world. My point is this, I believe that God uses us to offer refuge to the displaced. And this is my answer. It's not a perfect answer, but it's the best one I have. This is my answer to the question that comes up anytime something tragic happens in our world. Anytime there is some kind of major calamity or event, environmental or violence or whatever, people seem to come back to the same question. Where was God? And it's like this stumping question, where was God? See, you can't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer for that, but here's my response every time I hear that. Where was God during the Paris terror attacks? Where was God in this earthquake 5 years ago that displaced thousands of Haitians from their homes? Where was God in the persecution that turned a half of a nation of Syrians into refugees? Where was God in the hundreds of kids who are displaced right now in the foster care system of Colorado Springs? Where was God when a young Ethiopian boy, we're going to talk about in a moment, was displaced by being born with two genders in an area of the world where that gets you killed? Where was God in all of this? And my response, not perfect, but it's the best I have, is this. God is in our response. That the followers of God have always been called upon to help the world's most abused, hurt, helpless, exploited, and destitute, all the poor and powerless. And when we act in this way, we're taking the heart of God and bringing the hands of Christ to bear. And so we need to admit we're not the Christ. We said that last week. I am not the Christ, right? That's our kind of our mantra. We also admit the world is not ours to save. We're not going to fix everything. We get all that. Yeah. But the question I want to keep asking is this: how are we offering refuge to the displaced? In a moment, I want to show you how our church is going to have some opportunities for us to be involved in that in both financial and other practical ways. But before we do that, I want to give us a moment to reflect with God. I want to give you a moment just to wrestle with two questions here. I'll put the first two up here. When have you felt displacement? How do you identify with that? And then what has God revealed to you about that? How has God spoken to you in the midst of your own displacement in ways that you can now... You have a sense that he's saying something to you. Let me give you a moment to talk with God about that, and then I'll go back and show you some ways that we could take Psalm 9 and 10 and make them a reality for us. Psalm 10:14 reminds us that God is the helper of the fatherless. We've been in a series that we conclude today called Come Home, and we really talked about the last several weeks all the different ways that God can speak into displacement when we don't have a home and can use that to bring us home, whether he's speaking to a prodigal son, whether he's speaking to someone who's experiencing great separation from others because of medical issues or whatever, that he can speak into that. We've looked at some of those ways that God can speak into the displacement we've experienced, the pain, some of the struggles, some of the questions, some of the desires of our heart where we've not felt home. And God can speak into that and can offer home. And as we've talked about that, it's kind of morphed a little bit towards the end of this to begin to ask the question, well, what about those outside who are displaced? Not just us, and we're learning that. How can we use our displacement to help meet the needs of those displaced around us? And that's what we want to talk about in our Christmas offering this year. Our Christmas offering theme is refuge. I wanted to have it be displacement, but our team said, that's such a downer. Go push past that. The theme can't be displacement. It has to be something hopeful. And I was like, you're right. So what is it God does with the displaced? He offers refuge. We want to walk in those steps with him as well. And so what I want to share with you right now is I want to tell you some different stories about the four main mission focus of our church. We have four different areas, as you know, if you've been here a while, that we try to focus on. But specifically this year, they all tie into this theme of people who are being displaced and how we want to address that. We want to address that largely through giving, through our offering, but there are some other practical ways that we can be part of that as well. So that's what I want you to walk with me through this morning. So here's the first one. Let me walk you through these four areas. The first is an area that we just call the vulnerable. These are people in our world that don't have a voice. What we want to do this year is we want to have $26,000 of our Christmas offering go towards moving four Haitian families from blue tarps to block homes. To do this, it costs $6,500 per house. Now, this summer, my wife and I went with our kids on a mission trip to Haiti, and we partnered with this organization called Mission of Hope. And it was great. We got to do and see a lot of things. We focused most of our time in this village called Minotree. And it's a village where after the earthquake, all these people kind of got dumped in. And so while we were there that week, a big part of what we did is we went door to door, kind of house to house, and they welcome us in because we were foreigners and it was kind of a polite thing. And we could go sometimes where some natives couldn't go. And we would teach them about things like basic hygiene. And it was a special moment for me as a father to watch my three sons teach another culture about hygiene. I was like, I'm so glad. I hope some of this comes back with us. But we also got to install some water purifiers because they didn't have access to clean water there. And we also got to share the gospel with people. We got to do some surveys of what the needs were in these homes. And then we would go back and we'd give that information to the local pastor who then could follow up with those people. It was kind of a neat deal. Well, as you know, this area of Haiti, this country of Haiti, was hit about almost 6 years ago now by a devastating earthquake. I mean, just leveled this place. And as you know, this is how it works, right? Immediately when there's a global tragedy, everybody gets all excited and stirred up, and they throw a bunch of money, and then the next tragedy comes along, and we move on. So thousands and thousands of people in Haiti were displaced, homes destroyed. Now, places like Samaritan's Purse, they stepped in right away, and they provided these tarps to do some temporary housing. So here's an example of the temporary housing that was built for this earthquake 6 years ago. I took that photo this summer. People are still living in the temporary housing that was only meant to keep them for a few weeks. And really what you're just seeing here is that's literally blue tarps. You can almost make out where it says Samaritan's Purse there. By the way, it so rocketed my faith in that organization to see them. And they were everywhere in Haiti. Well, we get to walk through. Here, let me show you another house. This is actually a house that we went inside, and we were getting a chance to pray and share with this woman. She had four little kids in there. They're all running around. And the day that we took this, it was super hot. Like, it was hot. And then we got inside this thing, and it is an oven in there. It was unbearable. And this woman, Pam, was praying. She was praying for the mom and praying for the kids. And I was going to, honest confession, while she was praying, I was praying. And I was praying this, God, make Pam shut up. Make her stop praying. Get her to the end of it. I mean, you've heard everything. Just wrap it up and finish this because it's so hot. I don't know if I can stand in here anymore. And I felt like God said, and yet this is where she lives and with her kids. I was like, wow. I mean, here I'm so put off by a few moments of displacement. So it started to move us. And there was a group of us that kind of on this trip together from some different churches and some different states that said, well, wait, this isn't right. There's a whole village here where there are 90 families still in this village that are living 5 years later displaced. What can we do to help? This is what we came up with.
Minatry is a coastal fishing village about 20 miles north of Port-au-Prince, Haiti, with a high displacement population. Many residents were dropped off here after a massive earthquake in 2010 destroyed their homes. They arrived here with almost no belongings and no place to live. They were given blue tents as temporary housing. 5 years later, they're still living in those blue tents. For many, this makes life very difficult. They have no security and are exposed to heat, wind, and extreme weather. On average, families with 5 to 6 children live in these small tents. Our mission is to partner with Mission of Hope Haiti to provide permanent homes for 90 families living in tents in Minatry. The cost of each home built is $6,500 and includes 3 rooms, a small plot of land for farming, a bathroom, and fruit trees. It also gives access to education, a church, water, and training in agriculture. These homes give hope. These homes give safety. These homes change lives. Start or join a campaign today.
So while we were there, we were asking Mission of Hope, hey, tell us about this village, Minatry, and they said, oh, there's 90 homes left. And we realized, you know, we can't fix everything and do everything, but this kind of fell under the category of no-brainer for us, that we could partner together and get some churches, some people involved to do this. And, you know, outside of the gospel of Jesus Christ and outside of an education, I think having a place to live might be one of the biggest game changers to change someone's life. And we got excited about this. So where we are right now is that we've committed as Pulpit Rock that where I'm trying to commit us to is to say, hey, what if we do 4 of the 90 homes? What if we do 4 of those? And there's some other people working in other places as well. You can actually go to our website if you want to find out more information here. And I rarely have done this. I don't want to play this card a lot because it can be abused, but I've been praying about it a lot. I want to throw this out. I think there's a family in our church that this Christmas offering are going to say, we want to do an entire home ourselves. We want to do the whole thing. We don't want to just give towards, but we want to do one whole house ourselves. I want you to really pray about that if that's your family. Like I said, I don't always throw that out, but I'm throwing it out now because I think it's something that could happen there. And it would be so awesome to, in my mind, to see us go. We're going to get a chance to go back there next year. I would love to go back and see that an entire village has found a home. That's awesome to me. So that's our first area of displacement, okay? Now, you don't always have to go out of our country to find people who are being displaced. Sometimes they come to us. That's the second area of displacement we want to talk about this year, and it's the city. We want to raise $14,000 to restore temporary housing for refugees that are coming to Colorado Springs from around the world. Now, let me just touch on this for a minute, because you may have heard this is kind of in the news right now, right? All of us were so moved a few months ago when we saw these images of these Syrian refugees fleeing for their lives and trying to travel at night so that they could make it in safety, trying to guard their kids so they wouldn't be snatched up by these evil men who are going to try to turn them into weapons. And we're just watching this wondering, what can we do? And I really began to connect with that a little bit because you start imagining what it's like to be a refugee, to go somewhere you've lost home, you've lost contact. As we began to talk about what can we do to help the Syrian crisis, we learned this amazing fact that we don't actually have to go or send something somewhere else because God brings those people to us. One of our own members, Sandra Zubukovic, we started to talk with her. She volunteers out at Lutheran Family Services. One of the things she does is she kind of helps coordinate when refugees, families come to our town. They don't know how to get a driver's license. They don't know how to buy groceries. They don't know how it works here. This is a complicated place to be, right? She helps them do that. We started talking with Lutheran Family Services and discovered in the next 12 months, Colorado Springs is slated to receive, they're going to receive 150 refugees. They're going to come from the Congo, Burundi, Iraq, Afghanistan, Nepal, and Cuba. They're not coming from Syria. As you know, that's kind of a yet-to-be-decided thing. Now, let me just take a moment. I just want to pause because since we're talking about this, I might as well say this. Let me remind us that there's not always a clear Christian response. I think one of the traps we fall into is we say, well, Christians would do this. And Christians would do this is a trap that has driven a lot of bad political thought. It's driven a lot of bad kind of theological thought. It's not, Christians should do that. That's not always clear. And I'll be the first to admit, I don't have all the answers here. I don't know that there's a clear way. In fact, if any of you in this room come up to me afterwards and go, I know clearly what we should do, I'm going to not believe anything else that you say ever again in your life, because you don't. It's complicated. And what I discover is that even a good Christian here who believes this and a good Christian here who believes this can be at odds on how that goes. That's called life. And I love that Pulpit Rock is like that. I never want to be a place where we all agree. If we all agree, there's something wrong. I want us to be disagreeing on things and working through these issues. But let me just suggest this. Don't act like being a Christian means you always have a clear answer. It's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to listen. It's okay to bring theology to bear, but don't just think that it's simple. This is complicated and it's painful. But let me also say this. What we're talking about here is not the issue of what we need to do with the Syrian refugees. I don't know how Washington's going to solve all this stuff. I'm glad I'm not there trying to figure it out. I don't really give a rip about that. What I give a rip about is God, as a citizen of Colorado Springs, and more importantly, as a citizen of the kingdom of God, what do I do with the refugees who are already at my door, who are already in our city, who are already in track to come here? That's who I want to focus on. I don't know how to solve the issue, and like I said, I don't know what the right answer to the Syrian refugee crisis is. It's a big one, and it's difficult and complicated, but I do know this. One thing that's much more clear to me is we got strangers here in town. How can we love on them? How can we offer refuge? And like in Haiti, we can't do everything, but we can do something. And that's why we wanted to partner with Lutheran Family Services. What they do is they welcome refugees who come into town, and they give them some time and opportunity to integrate into the system. These are moms and dads and kids who are just trying to figure out how to buy milk. They don't know how to do it. And so what they do, one of the main things they do is they offer temporary housing, because if you can just have a place to live for a few months while you're getting a job, it can make a huge difference. Now, they have two condos that they use to house these 150 people coming in. Let me show you a picture of one of them. It's just a nice little place right here. And these condos are falling into some disrepair. They need a lot of work. They need appliances. They need paint. They need to be cleaned up. They need to be a nice, safe place. You can imagine with all the different people coming through, right, it gets a lot of use, like a hotel or something. Let me tell you a story. Here's actually a family that's living there right now. This guy's name is Mohammed, and this is his family. Mohammed is from Afghanistan. He spent the last 10 years of his life risking his life working for the United States military in Afghanistan and finally made his way out here. This is his wife. She's an educated Afghan woman who is excited to learn English. When I say she's educated, this is something they told us. She's proud of the fact that she completed high school in Afghanistan. And these are their two kids. They're 2 and 4 years old, full of energy, just ready to have friends. Mohammed wants to get to work. He wants to find a place in the city where he can do what most of us want to do, which is he wants to put food on his table. And while he's trying to get that job going, he's very grateful for the chance to have a place to breathe and rest and sit with his family and call it home. But like I said, these condos need work. And so we want to raise money to refurbish these two condos. And there might actually be some room for some of you that have skills with your hands, with building things, or I can break things well, but some of you are good at building things. Some of you, we can find some ways to get involved there. What I'm really excited here is this. It's not just about fixing a building. I hope that we can take some more steps into becoming like Sandra as a church and finding opportunities for small groups and individuals who say, I'd love to do something about the refugee crisis. I don't want to get on Facebook and post about it. What can I actually do? Here's some opportunities so we can serve in our own city and be the heart and hands of Christ. Well, refuge, offering refuge sometimes looks like going to another city, country. Sometimes it looks like opening your eyes to the opportunities in your own city. Recently, this last year, I discovered an opportunity of refuge that I had never dreamed of before. And it comes to our third area, the local church. We want to raise $10,000 in our ongoing partnership with the Leku Keta Kelhuet Church in Ethiopia to provide medical refuge. Now, here's where I'm going with that. Many of you remember this summer when Jonathan Cleveland and the team came back from Ethiopia, and they told the story about a young boy named Johannes. Do you remember this story? Johannes is a young boy who was born in rural Ethiopia. Now, not too long ago, his mom was pregnant, and when she actually delivered her baby, the village midwife saw that the baby had this condition that they call in Ethiopia being intersexed. That means that you have ambiguous genitalia. They don't know if you're a boy or a girl. They can't tell. Now, when the midwife saw this, she made the natural assumption of that region, which was that this child was cursed, so she put the kid to death. That was her natural reaction. Now, what she didn't know, and what no one else in the village knew but Johannes' parents, is that Johannes has the same condition. He's 8 years old. He's getting to that point in life where he's got to start figuring some things out. And so his parents were afraid that somebody would find out about Johannes, and they would come to the same conclusion this midwife had, and so they fled for their lives, and they came to the big city not knowing anybody. Thankfully, God, who helps the fatherless, brought them to this church. And this church met with them, and they were brave enough to share their story with this church. And instead of the church saying that this was a curse, here's what they said. They said, "We don't believe God makes mistakes. We believe that everyone has value. And if there's something we can do to help this boy, we will." When we heard that, our team said, "We're pushing our chips in on this. This is what we want to be about." And so we committed to walking with them through this unusual journey, where here's a guy that is a refugee in a sense because of his medical condition, because of the way that he was born. It's odd. And so one of the things that we've already done is we found out that one of the first steps here is figuring out genetic testing. Is Johannes a boy or a girl? How do we proceed with that? It's all medical and complicated. And so what we did is we took some money from the normal giving, faithful giving that you already do, and we took some money. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for giving to this place so that we have some freedom to make decisions. So we said, get the test done. They got the test done. It came back. Johannes is a boy. Great. What's the next step? Well, he needs to have a surgery to kind of correct some things. Okay. So we went ahead and said, go ahead and do it, even though we were going to talk about this offering. And so he actually had the first of his surgeries a couple weeks ago. Here he is. That's him laying in bed recovering. He's there with Bifa, who runs the orphan outreach at their church. Isn't that awesome? Now, he's not done yet. He needs hormone therapy, may need some more surgeries, but I mean, here's a guy who is finding home in his own body, and we're going to follow him with that. And so we want to raise money for that, and as his situation rose up, it made us realize, wow, sometimes God can use healing, sometimes God can use medicine to provide refuge, and so we want to go back sometime next year on a medical mission trip to find out from this church, how else can we partner in ways? And so we're raising some money for some medical supplies there as well. Well, those are three stories. Here's my last one. Sometimes, for us to have God's heart for the displaced, we don't have to think about another country. We don't have to think about our own city. We don't have to think about maybe some unusual way. Sometimes we have to be displaced ourselves. We're entering a season right now where we're celebrating that Christ displaced himself to come to us. He became homeless because we're not yet home. So in 2016, we want to raise up $30,000 for the next generation. And what that means, when we talk about the next generation at Pulpit Rock, it's the answer to the question, who's going to bear the gospel when we're gone? Who are we training to do that? So we want to do that by helping 50 people who've never been on mission out of country before to go in 2016 and 2017. What we're asking for you to do is to really pray about being homeless for a week to take some people the opportunity to come home. This is one of the things I see as I read through the Gospels. It was a major tool of how Christ trained his disciples. Yes, he taught them and he trained them, but there came a point where he said, I can't teach you anymore until you go out and experience it yourself. And so he sent them out on mission, and then they came back and they're like, hey, Jesus, I want to go back on that stuff you said. It's kind of like what premarital counseling, which I used to do. I don't do it anymore. I'm not equipped for it. I know less about premarital counseling now than I did when I was newly married. So there's this couple that was meeting with me, and I was talking to them about conflict management because I'm so good at that. And I said, hey, let me guys tell you guys how, this is how scripture says we work through conflict. And they just sat there like a newlywed couple. They were kind of like one blob all, you know, I don't know where one ended. They're all sitting on the couch like this, and they're sharing, writing in the book together. He's holding the book, she's writing in it. And they smiled at me and they said, Thomas, we just don't need this. I said, why don't you need this? And they go, because we're in love. And we love Jesus. And I said, even Jesus is cracking up at that. That is not. I said, okay. Well, here's the stuff anyways. And what I realized at that moment is that training can only do so much. They had to experience and be exposed to the first 6 months of marriage. And then 6 months later, it's magical how they came back and they're like, what was that stuff about conflict again? How do we need that? In the same way, this is how we equip the next generation of Christ. We train people to go. And then we give people opportunities to go. And then this may be the most important part. When they come back, we debrief, we realign, we readjust what we're doing. If you will go and allow yourself to be displaced by going out of a country and leaving your comfort zone, I believe that you will return with an understanding that you could never get secondhand. I believe that you'll have fresh eyes to look at your own neighborhood and your own city and see opportunities you didn't see before. And I believe that you're going to come back better equipped to help us as a church make decisions about where to pray, where to spend our resources, how to invest. And if you bring your kids along, like we've been trying to do, you will learn tons. When kids get to see mom and dad in a different situation, and you come back with a shared experience that you can build on as a family. And that's why one of our major efforts this next year to train people is to ask 50 of you who've never been on a mission trip out of the country before to go for the first time. Now, I understand the issue here is finances. What we're trying to do is take a little bit of that off the table. So people can't say, I'd love to go on missions, but I don't have the money to do that. We want to take that off the table. Now, you guys are smart, and you've done the math already, and you figured that 50 people into $30,000 is like $7,000 a person or something, right? Like, you figured that out. It's not enough, right? It shouldn't be. We're not looking to fully fund things. What we're looking, because we don't want to ever cut out the value of involving other people and raising support. But what we want to do is to have some of you who that's been an obstacle for you to say in this next year, I'm going to go. Some of you are going to be younger people that are just beginning your life. Some of you are people right now that you're thinking, well, that ship sailed for me a few years ago, and God's saying to you, no, it hasn't. I want you to go. I'm going to take a trip. Kyle and I are going to take 30 people back to Haiti in June of 2016. We're going to partner with that organization. They've done one of the best jobs I've ever seen of offering refuge to the fatherless. And I think we can learn a lot from them as a team. I'm excited not just about the trip. I'm excited about the conversation after the trip where we say, how do we do this in our city? That's what I'm excited about. We're also going to be going back to Ethiopia. There are going to be other opportunities God's going to bring your way next year. And I want you to not have the fact that you don't have money. Cut that out of the equation. So we want to do that. We want to train through exposure. Here's the question I'd love for you to be praying about as you pray about this offering. Do I need to be displaced next year? Well, these are the four areas of displacement we want to offer refuge to in our Christmas offering. They're on this card. I'd love for you to take this card home with you. And as we do at Pulpit Rock, it's not a hard sell. It's just simply this. Ask God what to do. If God says give, please have courage and give. If God says you're done, then don't. But maybe he's asking you to pray, or maybe he's asking you to get involved with Lutheran Family Services, or to maybe consider going on a trip with us. But just pray and talk about that. One question that'll come up, I'll address real quick, and then I'll close. Hey, Thomas, you talked about our auditorium being destroyed. Where is that on here? When are we going to fix that? Well, let me tell you, we debated that. We talked a lot about what to do there, and we landed on this. By faith, we're choosing to believe that if our people continue to give as you have been, healthy, regular, ongoing giving to this church, and if you will give to the Christmas offering, not instead of, but on top of what you would normally give to this church, we really think that we can refinance, or we can finance the refurbishment of this auditorium without doing that. And that's going to allow us to really keep this offering about giving refuge to those experiencing displacement on the outside of our church first. And then if we go above our goal, as we've done every year that we've done this, then we can talk about using some of that, maybe our own building. But I'll close with this, great men and women of God. We're in a season as a church, we're in a moment of time as a nation, where we are surrounded with physical and obvious reminders of our need for refuge. And in this moment, we can focus on ourselves, what we've lost, what we've missed, how we protect what we have, or we can lean into our displacement and say, God, what do you want to do with me here? How can I offer refuge to the displaced all around me? We're asking you as a church, together, will you lean into this moment with us? Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you have continued to come after us, your people. You continue to displace yourself to reach us, and you continue to call those of us who follow you to reach others by being willing to be displaced in many ways. And so I thank you for that. I think that you're a God that's not put off by this. You're not afraid, and you don't call us to be afraid. Lord, I pray for this offering, and I release it to you right now. This is a huge amount, Lord, and we believe that you've led us to this point. And so I just release that in front of all my brothers and sisters here to you, and we give this to you, Lord, and we ask that if it is to be done, that you do it, and you do it through your people. We pray that you continue to help us as a church to always look to how we can have the heart that offers help to the fatherless. May we walk with you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.